And welcome to the June 1st edition of In the Moment Tech Radio. I'm your host, Kent Osborne. We've gathered the experts to talk tech today, answer any and all of your questions. In the studios of KCSD in Sioux Falls, Mac guru Joel Brovelite is on board. Good day, Joel.
Good afternoon.
How are you, sir?
I'm doing well.
Good morning. Yeah. To the west. Yeah. West River.
West River, absolutely.
Right, exactly. So Lemon Lee's John T. Meyer, I hear you there as well.
Howdy. Yeah, good to be back on the show.
Couldn't be in the studio today with you, but, you know, it's like I'm there, sort of.
In spirit. You're here in spirit.
Absolutely. How are things at Lemon Lee?
Things are good. Yeah, we're doing well, keeping busy. We're still trying to figure out how to moderate the temperature now that that South Dakota has switched from winter to summer almost immediately. And so our Nest thermostats are all like, you know, messed up, and they think it's 78 degrees in the office. And some people, of course, and some employees are cold and some are hot, and just can't win the battle.
You can't. No, there's no way. That's South Dakota for you, isn't it? In the middle of South Dakota is Jeff Litterick. He's out at the Bureau of Information and Telecommunications in Pierre, enjoying some road construction out his window. Hi, Jeff.
The road construction, that never ends. I'm doing good, so it's been a nice day in Pierre, even though it threatens to rain every 30 seconds. So,
well, my lawn likes that, but nobody else seems to. Anyway, folks, you ask the questions and we provide the answers. If you're a Facebook aficionado, that page is simply facebook.com/techradio. You can post your questions, your comments there. Don't be shy. I put a Pew article there. The polling firm Pew had some really interesting things to say about the kids, 13 to 17 year olds, and their use of social media and things. And it's a really in-depth article. In fact, so in-depth, we're probably not going to talk much about it on the show today. It's just it's a big read. So I linked that on the Facebook. If you have no other reason to go to Facebook today, go to facebook.com/techradio and check out the link that I provided for you there. It's interesting. I don't have any kids in that range, but yet on the business side of things, I need to pay attention to things like that. So to see what's going to be trending and what's going to be happening and how kids are responding to technology and social media. So very, very interesting read. Anyway, you can access that. You can drop comments there and questions as well. Facebook.com/techradio, that place to go to. Well, lots in the news this week. First I want to just a problem I just experienced, John. Have you been having any issues with Twitter this week?
Like it's down, or what do you mean?
Yeah, not letting you tweet, or apparently I just was reading earlier there's a bug saying that people didn't have any followers, they needed to reinstall, that sort of thing. But have you personally had any problems?
I haven't had any issues tweeting. I did read, and Joel and I were talking about this before the show, with the recent GDPR privacy policy changes. I heard that some people's accounts, if you were in Europe, I think that one of the rules is something about being online at the age of 13. And so if you started a Twitter account in Europe when you were under 13, even if you're over 13 now, those accounts were actually getting deleted by Twitter because of this privacy policy terms. So I know there was a few people pretty upset about, like, you know, where did my Twitter account go? Why did I lose all my followers, all my tweets? And so I've heard that related to privacy policy, but not maintenance or uptime.
Well, just to play on that or off of that, I think a lot of people in Europe are having some heartburn over this whole issue. And
email inbox is having heartburn.
To Americans, yeah. We see, it's just been a flood of please update your privacy settings, or we've updated our privacy settings, please check off on them, or whatever. And it isn't good enough just to read it. You need to go and accept it. But what's happening to the European folks, and a lot of news sites now are blocking European IP addresses because they can't, come to terms with the rules that are being put in place, at least right now. They're working on it. But
Yeah, I think I saw Pinterest had said, like, yeah, we're not up to snuff yet, and so you can't use Pinterest in Europe right now. And so I don't think you have to necessarily, if you're listening open those emails and accept anything, but if you go to a website, you may find a prompt, a notification that says allow or deny us to use your information, and so that you would have to do if you want to use some certain websites.
What do I need to be concerned about any of this, or what do I need to know, I guess, about these rules?
I wouldn't be concerned about it. I mean, we also contacted our lawyer at Lemonly just because we have an email, right? We have like a monthly email newsletter, and so we do capture your email if you opt in to join our newsletter. Thankfully, we don't keep any of the data like on our server. So if we use MailChimp as our email marketing, we use Google and Google Apps in terms of our email and data, and so we're able to kind of piggyback off of their new terms and conditions, their privacy policies. But I don't know. What do you think, Joel? I don't think there's a ton of concern to the user, especially in the United States.
I think most of it's positive. We're kind of gaining benefits from the European regulations. People overseas, even though our regulations are much more lax, we're getting lots of benefit from more transparency from these companies, whether it's Facebook or Twitter or Pinterest or even smaller companies that you wouldn't even thought of, like Lemonly. They now have to upfront tell you how they use your data, where they use it, and when they use it. So it's kind of really all good, no bad. And one of the big things that I think is great, although having skimmed through some of the emails, I'm not sure it's entirely accurate, but the terms of service has to now be written in what they call plain English, which, to be fair, doesn't necessarily mean they're shorter, but maybe easier to understand. And I think that rings true, at least for some of them. And that will probably get better over time. So, I wouldn't worry about it. I also wouldn't spend your time reading all those terms of service unless that's something you do. One thing I thought was interesting is I heard a story last night on CBC, Canadian radio, that there's now an Alexa skill that will read terms of service to you as a way to put you to sleep. So it's built into the app. I don't know if anybody's used the app Calm.
I've heard of it.
Yeah, it has lots of different ways to either put you to sleep or calm you down. And one of the, and I'm not sure if it was a joke or if they're serious, but they will read you the terms of service. And they got an actor to read it. It's pretty hilarious if you want to check it out. An
NPR journalist or something with that soothing voice.
Right.
Well.
So yeah, all good, no
and
bad
I think,
as far as I can tell.
I think
tell.
What Joel's saying is like, this will probably be a net positive for everybody. It's just so early days in terms of privacy policy. And I think what we're seeing is this isn't going to be the first time we deal with something like this all around the world, different policies, how data is being used, just the new era that we're entering in. And I would expect more things like this in the future.
It's
also a really good opportunity to unsubscribe from things that you realize, why do I still get those emails?
Yeah, I've been doing a lot of that as well, blocking and unsubscribing and deleting, especially with all the Facebook things of the last month or so. We talked about that on one show, how many apps we actually got rid of and just aren't there anymore. Mm-hmm. And then Facebook took care of some of those for us anyway, which was awfully nice of them. But it very interesting, and I think the take I'm getting is Europeans are saying, well, come on, you knew this was coming. You had a year to deal with it. And on the other side, the big websites are going, man, if they come to me and ask me to scrub all their data, we're not sure we can do it, in a reasonable way without taking a lot of time and effort and that they don't have.
Yeah, I'm frankly surprised at the surprise people have that these companies are waiting till the very last minute to update and send it out. Isn't that how everything works? Isn't that just what you would expect, that the company would wait until 11:59 to send out that email? It seems logical to me. Why?
I mean, we were tackling ours very last minute, and I felt a little bit validated when I was getting emails from, Airbnb. And
a week later.
yeah, right, after totally. Ours, like on the right. day of.
Yeah, so, I mean, that takes time and money for them to do that. It's a big deal. So, some of these companies are going to wait and find out what the other companies are doing so they make sure that they don't either A, make the same mistakes, or B, do it right like said company. So,
You've hit on my philosophy,
Yeah, right. What I think will be interesting is how much of these regulations get kind of adopted and swallowed up by U.S. lawmakers. Probably not at the federal level at this point, unfortunately, but maybe more state regulations. You'll probably see that with, you know, starting with California or New York. And then when, you know, those two go down, usually it kind of winds up being, you know, countrywide. So I think we'll see more of that, too. So, again, kind of all good, no bad.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, speaking of regulations, I wanted to ask, I guess, anyone, John in particular. In two instances now, Facebook twice and now Twitter with the big case that we've all heard about, the federal lawsuit has said that, what started this all off, National City, California, a man blocked on Facebook by the mayor there, Ron Morrison, filed a federal lawsuit accusing the mayor of First Amendment violations. And what happened was, apparently the mayor uses the word harassed. I don't know if the guy would use that, but he was very, over the course of years, was very persistent. And the mayor blocked him. He went to court and filed a lawsuit. It's very similar to the one that was filed against President Trump, where the federal judge recently ruled that the president can't block a critic on Twitter and on Facebook due to First Amendment protections. And this also happened with Maryland Governor Larry Hogan for his actions to block somebody on Facebook. So what do we feel about that? If they're trolls, truly trolls and harassing, even though they're politicians, do you think they should have the right to block or otherwise delete folks from their social media?
Well, one of the clarifications I'll put out, especially because this is in the Trump case, is the judge is very against blocking but not muting, which are two different things. In that the First Amendment, and they kind of explain this deeply, is if you're a government official and you're sending, and this is part of policy, right? I mean, he is the top of the government. You can't block people from reading it, but that doesn't mean you have to listen to them. So you can mute them, and they can't send you stuff, but that you can't block them where they cannot see what you're sending out. So there's a couple of different issues kind of going on there. Is you always have the right to be able to see what your government officials are saying, but do you have the right to actually, but do they have the right to not listen to you?
Okay.
It's going to play out. It's going to be kind of interesting.
So the case hasn't been settled then?
It's still going on. The judge was trying to get him into basically to agree on some stuff, and then she made this ruling, and now both parties are trying to agree to different stuff. This is going to keep going on for a while for the Trump one. They're fighting it. They're trying to come into a middle ground that works for both ways. This was just one of the judgments in the case. It seems to have hurried some stuff along, but no, the case is not finalized totally yet. So,
okay.
Well, and Jeff is talking semantics there about almost features of Twitter, right? So if you block a person, they can't see your tweets, they can't tweet you, you're basically invisible to them, whereas muting essentially does not put their tweets in your stream or your feed, you just don't see them. So in a way, Jeff's like, it's really not an issue. If you're muting someone, you're just saying, I don't want to, you're just trolls, right? I'm not going to listen. Whereas if you're blocking, you're essentially you're invisible to them on Twitter, more or less. And so I agree. I think it's actually a little bit more of a sexy headline and a story than probably an actual big deal to me. I mean, I agree that First Amendment, that's a serious deal. And I think it's probably the right decision. I've always heard an interesting take that some people feel that Twitter should be a utility, because at this point, and it's in the way that Twitter serves our world, you know, Twitter is a publicly traded company, but it's also the way people get emergency alerts and weather and news and not just entertainment and social media, right? It's almost a utility in itself, which I think that's an interesting way to think about Twitter. Now, obviously, there's some complications there because they're trying to run a business and have an ad platform as well.
Well, I mean, if you look at it from the perspective of an analog, you know, you can't stop somebody from sending a letter to the president. You can't stop somebody from, you know, holding a sign up at you know, as he drives down the street for a parade or something. You can't stop those things. So I don't know. It seems pretty straightforward that you couldn't block somebody from your Twitter account, especially if you're a politician, a public figure. You know, if you're an actor, you might have you probably do have a really good excuse there. But, you know, when you're creating policy or possibly announcing things on Twitter, as the president does, as a lot of politicians do, pretty obvious that you really can't do that. So, like they said, it's not actually a ruling yet. At this point, it's a suggestion, but the Justice Department has, I think, 60 days to appeal it. So, again, we won't know yet, but I think the writing's on the wall. I think we know which way it's going to go. So,
okay. One other little quick piece of news I wanted to get, make sure I got in today, and I know we're running a little late on time, but there's a school in New York. It's just north of Lockport, New York. It's just north of Buffalo, I believe. Is being outfitted with surveillance systems that all the schools in the district that can identify faces and objects. So the software known as Aegis was developed in Canada by a Canadian biometrics firm, and they specifically advertised to schools. Can be used to alert officials to whenever, say, sex offenders, suspended students, fired employees, suspected gang members, or anyone else placed on the school's blacklist enters on the premises. It also sends alerts anytime one of, and this is interesting, the top 10 most popular guns are used in school shootings appear in view of a camera. Not sure why it's the top 10, but what makes it that way, or why it wouldn't recognize all sort of gun shapes. But anyway, that's the way the release read. So my question is, just because this stuff is on the market, does that mean the school system should buy it and use it? In first blush, I think, oh, that's a cool use of technology. You wonder, is this going to help? Is this going to stop? They installed it to help with the mass shooting problem and with the shootings in schools.
I'll go over a little bit of the technical stuff because there was a very interesting debate on some of the more technical websites about this technology, in that you have to realize this has a 97% failure rate. So to take that in perspective, so suppose you block somebody and then the system alerts on, hey, this is your suspect. In this case, it was law enforcement doing the same thing in China and stuff, which the same technology is. It has a 95% failure rate that it actually identified the person as the person you're trying to look for. So when they actually did testing and stuff on this, so it can actually backfire and make more work on security because they're chasing down these false positives. Now, not learning everybody, right? But if it sees the suspect or thinks it sees it like 10 times, nine times that will be the wrong person. So running down and seeing it will really depend on how well this thing works in the end. So it's kind of a fascinating topic right now because there's a lot of stats coming out on this stuff because this is really big in China. I mean, you don't walk around much in any city in China without facial recognition watching your every move. So it's kind of a thing that's coming. Most of the other countries are much ahead of this and using this, especially in Europe and China. We Americans tend not to like this stuff somewhat, so it's been a slower adoption here. So,
this makes me wonder before this matures, because it sounds like it's not very mature at this point. The technology, if it has that high of a failure rate, why would you even want to install it in the working world. Wouldn't you wait for the AI to get better and wait for this thing to work before you went and spent it? It sounds like they're spending a good chunk of their they got a $4 million budget to do some school security things, and they're spending a good chunk of that on this.
That was the nexus of a massive, I won't say flame war, because it did devolve into that, but about 2,000 comments, a little debate going on about this once that come out. Now, you have to remember, it may only alert, five times a day. It's just that on those alerts, 97% will be false. What we don't know, because, you did go out and arrest the correct guy, is how many they missed, right? How many times did the suspect actually walk in front of the camera and not get detected? So there's a lot of stuff going on back and forth with this. It's an interesting kind of technology debate. I would tend to want it to mature out a bit, but it's becoming very big, very fast in many different areas, not just security. But also to recognize shoppers as they walk into the store and what they want to buy and that kind of stuff, targeted ads, a whole range of things, because it lets a lot of different systems know who you are and tie your data to who and customize the experience to you as an individual. So, which also has lots of privacy implications down the road too, but there's a lot of people pushing for this. And just not for security.
Are people going to get ahead of this with laws, either locally or nationally, to stop this from happening before it gets better?
I will say chances are no. Most of our laws in our country, and even in most countries, is retroactive. It's usually when a problem comes up, then they pass a law to solve it. But until the problem comes up, they tend not to pass laws. And that's just been my experience, especially on the tech side. Because most politicians don't understand the tech and the consequences of the tech necessarily until bad things happen, and then they want to pass laws to fix it at that point. So that's probably what's going to happen, but I would like to have some privacy laws on the front end, but we will see.
I guess that's why we elect school board members then, to try to make good decisions about either to do this or not to do this on the local level.
And one of the things, this was a big news too, and it was at the school, was Facebook was, or was it Facebook? Some big company that does a lot of facial recognition stuff like this was actually sharing the database with law enforcement, and that was kind of a big sting too, because law enforcement was using it at stadiums and stuff trying to track down suspects from different commercial facial databases. So, where do we stop? Can law enforcement go to a Facebook page, pull the picture off, and then do a search for you and see every place you've ever been in the past year, and how long you spent there, and what you did each location? This could have wide impacts, especially in data sharing. So
I think it was Amazon that made the news that they were selling the technology to police departments, wasn't it? Was that the?
Yeah, they were just selling the technology. They were selling the faces and databases with it, so to give them kind of a heads up on if they needed to find somebody.
Okay. Well, we have surpassed that time. I'm getting the break signal from the control room, and we need to take a quick break. Again, folks, you can get in on the questions today. Our phone number, 800-524-3604. Twitter users, that handle for me is @KentSDPB, and the email address is InTheMoment@sdpb.org. We'll be right back, and we're going to talk a little bit about Alexa being a little bit naughty. And welcome back to In the Moment on SDPB Radio. I'm Kent Osborne, and we have successfully switched gears, and we're talking tech with the computer guys. We have Joel Brovelite on board, our resident Mac guru. We have from Lemonly, John T. Meyer, and from the Bureau in Peer, Jeff Litterick on the line to take your questions. You can send us a text, 956-SDPB. That's 956-7372 in the 605 area code, of course. 605-956-7372. I got to ask this question. I don't think there's anybody on the panel with more Amazon Echo devices in their house than Joel Brovelite, I'm guessing. Joel, how many times a night does your Alexa just wake up and say, I don't understand what you're saying, or I didn't quite get that, or do you hear something from one of your devices that you didn't ask for?
Overnight, it's never happened to my knowledge. And I'd say, throughout the house, in the room here or there, when we're eating dinner in the dining room,
mm-hmm.
maybe once a week.
Okay.
Tops, maybe twice a week sometimes, but not very often.
It's been a couple usually of times a night in my house. I just have one device.
Multiple times a night?
Yeah.
Do you have some audio playing, like radio or TV?
Or watching the TV.
Oh, well, yeah, that would be why. Yeah.
And I'll be talking to the wife or.
I would just recommend repositioning the device.
Giving affirmations to our animals, maybe? I don't know. But
just reposition it so the microphone doesn't necessarily pick up direct talk.
Yeah, we have one in the kitchen, but the TV's in the living room, so we've never had that problem.
Yeah,
but.
And that's usually what it is.
I wonder where I could put that, because it's kind of off on a bookshelf. But I'll try that. That's a great tip.
Yeah, move it left or right usually is kind of the way to do it.
Well, it'll give me a chance to dust it off. And
there you go. Those things do gather dust, though. That's no lie.
Especially in my house. But here's why I bring this up. Amazon needed to explain this week how Alexa recorded a private conversation and sent it to a user's colleague without their knowledge. So the story is that a Portland couple had sort of an odd series of events happen with their Amazon Echo device. The couple got this email from one of the husband's colleagues saying, why did you just send me a copy of you and your wife talking about solid wood flooring? And they said, we didn't. And Amazon's explanation is that something woke the Echo up, some word in the background that sounded something like Alexa. And then subsequently, that conversation to a conversation was heard, send message. And then Alexa said to whom, and then it, pulled somebody out of a contact list, and they said, is this person right? And then, again, it was this really unlikely string of events is what we're being told to believe that happened. And they have Amazon's confirmed that this happened. A conversation was recorded and sent. It's very interesting. We all knew that it's always listening because we put it in the house to do that. And I myself, this morning as I walked into my office, wanted to say, news update, Alexa, give me a news update. And I went, oh, geez, should I put one of these in my office? And then I sort of remembered the story from this week. And I don't think my business would want me to have an Echo or a Dot or anything in my office for privacy reasons and specifically because of this. So what do you guys feel about this? Is this a big concern or is this just some freak accident that happened?
My take, I think it's bad PR for Amazon because people are gonna be concerned about it, and obviously none of us want anything with our content and our data to be done that is against our wishes or in this case our even knowing. So I think there's going to be a little bit of a backlash. I think it's a little overblown in terms of this weird circumstance. And I still think there's part of maybe adopting or getting used to how this type of technology works because it's here to stay.
Yeah, right. If you dig into the story a little bit, it sounds like they were talking and Amazon interpreted something they said to open one of their applications and record and then interpreted a further part of their conversation after it asked the question as a response and then another response. So essentially these people had to have been talking and not listening for the response from the Alexa. Maybe it was turned way down.
Sure.
That's, this happened one time. Anything can happen one time. It just doesn't seem, it seems like a big bunch of nothing to me. It's unfortunate that it happened. Again, it is a bad PR move for or problem for Amazon, but I think that's about it. You know, as long if you know that that's in your office, you know that it's on. If it asks you a question, then it's whatever you say is going to be an answer. I don't know. I've never had anything even remotely like that happen, and they're on all the time, all over my house. So
that
it seems
you know
like just
of.
A complete freak accident and maybe carelessness by the user, frankly.
I think there's a little, you know, there's obviously this concern to like what someday, how much is Amazon listening? Are they recording it? Are they, you know, as these home devices, machine learning, natural NLP, AI, whatever you want to call it, make their way into our life, there's going to be some education and kind of understanding of how do these work, but these are not going away. I can tell you that Alexa and voice is going to be the new keyboard, right? There's no reason you're gonna text. We're gonna hopefully cut down on, you know, distracted driving and people texting with their phones while they're driving. Your voice is gonna be the command center moving forward with your relationship to technology. And when you say that out loud, it actually makes a lot of sense and seems pretty straightforward. I think there's going to be some user adoption because I find even myself, I don't know what you think. I know you're more of a, I have pretty minimal features on my Alexa or the Echo, but I find that I only use it more when I'm in the room by myself. And not that I'm even, you know, it almost seems outside of you being a music player, I'll listen to my Audible book or I'll ask it what the weather or the news is. I find that I just do that when I'm in a room by myself versus like, I feel like I'm interrupting when my family's around. I don't know why.
Yeah. I mean, I don't have a lot of apps installed on my Echo either. There's a few that we use, but for the most part, I use it the same way, you know, primarily as a way to play radio. But you know, we'll ask questions like, you know, when, I think last night we asked, when LeBron James was born. I mean, we asked that
sure.
while we were watching the game, and answered right away. So we kind of use it for that, but everybody knows how to use it in our house and when to use it. And frankly, there are so many features that we don't use. I often feel like, boy, I should really look into how this works because we could use this more. I think I mentioned last show that we use the drop-in feature, which is kind of the intercom feature, a lot. I used it two or three times yesterday.
Tell me about that one.
Just a quick recap on that. You can use one Echo device to talk to another Echo device, or you can use your phone to talk to an Echo device that's in your house. So if in this case my daughter was taking a bath in the other room, we're watching the game, and instead of, you know, turning my head and yelling to the far end of the house, I just said, you know, Alexa, drop in on bathroom, and comes up, and I talked to my daughter and I said, you got to be out in 5 minutes. Okay, Dad. And then that's it, you know. So we use those features, but, you know, and it just gets better and better. And all of this, whether it's the Google Assistant or Siri, all of these, you know, voice assistants are getting better and better. So,
well, and Amazon is subsidizing these products,
totally
selling them at a loss, right? So, is the Dot now $29 or
something like that? Yeah.
So, they're not making money on that gadget, but they want to get better, and they want the machines and the artificial intelligence and national learning the NLP stuff to start to become smarter. So I also think these things will hopefully they'll eliminate these type of incidences where things accidentally happen as your Alexa starts to learn how you talk and the way you talk.
Yeah, and I mean, one part that doesn't get, you know, talked about a lot, when you use any new tool, you have to learn how it works just as much as it learns how you work. In fact, that's a new thing where it learns how you work.
Yeah, true.
It used to be you had to learn how to use this device, and that was all there was to it. So some of that, I think, in the case of this user that had something recorded, I think had they been maybe a more informed user, that probably wouldn't have happened. I hate to pass judgment on somebody without knowing all the details, but from what I've read, it seems like if they had had it turned up or if they'd have known what app was installed, they maybe could have avoided this situation. This is just a good tip, really, with any tech device. Know how it works to the best of your ability. Ideally, things just work and you don't have to do much, and it's getting a lot more like that, but, you know, knowing how things work and how to integrate them into your life will make things easier, better, and most importantly, safer.
Yeah, it seems that the skill or the messaging skill is one of those that's the killer skill for a lot of folks. It's the big deal. It's the being able to just speak and send messages to folks. So to just, and you can shut that off, but a lot of people want to go in there and activate it or use it because it's handy. So, well.
Completely.
Yeah. All right. Well, good enough. Folks, we need to take another quick break. We come back, we'll wrap things up in the last segment. We have a listener text that we will get to on Bluetooth and lots, actually lots more that we'll get to on today's show right after this. And we're back with the third and final segment of In the Moment Tech Radio for this, this June 1st. Can't believe I'm saying that, but I am. Saying June 1st. We have the panel of experts here to talk to you today about questions that you have. Joel Brovleit is with us from Lemonly, John T. Meyer, and from the Bureau in Peer, Jeff Litterick. And I'm not sure who wants to take this one. We have a question off the being texted to us. Bluetooth, a little bit off topic. Anybody on the panel heard any progress on common usage of multi-point Bluetooth rather than the current one that devices use very commonly today? There are times when using Bluetooth between several devices would really be cool, but not Wi-Fi, mind you. So I guess less range than Wi-Fi. Bluetooth, who wants to take this one? Jeff, how would Bluetooth be better than Wi-Fi, and in what would be the applications for that?
Well, first of all, multi-point Bluetooth has been out for over 10 years. In its current state, what they mean by multi-point Bluetooth is you can pair your device with multiple transceivers. And it's kind of interesting. Some headsets can only support two. Some can support three. It's kind of a mixed match all over the place. And Amazon sells some TV transmitters that are multi-point Bluetooth so that you can actually hook up multiple devices to the same transmitter and get it. But you can only really, like if you're using headphones, you can only use one source at a time. That means you can't listen to two different audios at the same time, but you can pair with both of them at the same time, but you have to only activate one at the time to actually listen to it.
Okay.
The problem with going beyond that is Bluetooth is a 30-foot range technology, right? Unlike Wi-Fi, which is much more coverage. So, and even in that, you see some vendors only supporting two, some supporting three. I just did another quick search. Haven't heard of anything more advanced outside of maybe more pairings and stuff. Some TV stuff where you can maybe send the audio from the TV to like four or five devices. The problem with Bluetooth is you got a little bit of a security issue depending on what application you want to use. And also you have very limited range. So, you know, it's great inside your living room. It's not so great when you move up, when you walk across upstairs to your bedroom and stuff like that. It's just not going to work very well. So I'm not quite sure what application he's looking for to use this in. And sort of broadcast stuff, it is out there now, but it is limited by how many devices. And somewhat to remember, Bluetooth is limited by how much bandwidth. It's not nearly as much bandwidth on the back end as Wi-Fi. So if you need to transmit to a lot of devices, it can run out of bandwidth issues. And I think that's why some of the devices actually limit, you know, to two or three pair different devices at once instead of a whole bunch. So because you're kind of broadcasting out to everything.
Okay.
But it really depends on the application.
Yeah, but you're not seeing anything, any push to any more prevalence of this at the moment?
No. It's because the way Bluetooth is designed, it's always a one-to-one. The multi-point is nice because you can hook up multiple devices to the same audio source, but it's still, you can't listen to multiple audio sources at the same time. It's not going to switch for you automatically. It's not going to do the stuff. And it's kind of the way Bluetooth, it pulls and its protocols work. So, and I don't see someone willing to replace Bluetooth basic protocols with something else at this point. Maybe something new will come along if there is a good application for it. I'm just not outside of more devices paired. I'm not sure what the application would be though.
Okay, there isn't any way to get around
it. As a follow up to that, yeah. You know, Jeff's 100% right. Bluetooth 5.0, I think, is the latest iteration. Totally supports what this guy wants. It's just all software and the companies that make the networking or headphones or whatever it is that you want to use, they're the ones that have to make it so it you can sync it with two devices simultaneously and listen to one or the other. Again, not knowing exactly what he wants to do, we'd have to, you know, refer to that specifically. But it's the software provider that actually makes the difference on whether it will do what this person will do or not, because the hardware is kind of already there. It's just a matter of the demand for whatever feature it is. I know with the Apple EarPods, which I use, it's really easy to switch between multiple devices, whether it's my phone or my laptop or my iPad. And so it's kind of simultaneously paired with three devices, but I can only use it on one at a time. I just have to kind of select it as I go, which is very easy. I suppose Apple could make it even easier and do it automatically. But again, like Jeff said, that there's security issues there. So obviously they'll only do it when it makes sense.
Okay. All right. Well, we've hit that. Jeff, there was another topic I wanted to get to before the end of the show today. We might as well start now with you. The FBI has an urgent request, and that's to reboot your router. And that is somewhat tied to Russian-linked malware. You want to fill us in on what we need to do today if our router is on that list? I think that's Nexus, Microtech, Netgear, and TP-Link are the routers that they're talking about that we know of.
I'm going to go beyond the point and just say, because it's so easy to do, just reboot your router.
Unplug it.
Out for a few seconds, plug it back in. Because... Okay. And then also update it. Make sure it's either set to auto-update or it has the latest firmware. Routers are just like computers, right? We patch our computers. Well, routers need to be patched because there's security holes. In those particular routers you were talking about, there's a security hole that lets the user take over your router, install their own software, and they can actually even brick your router and make it unbootable. What happened is 150,000-plus of these routers were infected, and the FBI seized, just like in a malware incident, seized the domains that the hackers were using to spread this malware. Because they seized the domain, the attackers can't issue any commands, and if you reboot your router now, it will wipe the malware out because that's what the FBI set the command and control to do. So after you reboot the router, I highly suggest you go and patch your system so that you don't get reinfected by another group down the path somewhat. So, reboot your router. Check for your firmware. It's just good practice once a month or once every 2 months anyway, especially on the update stuff for new firmware. So it's just like a computer. It needs its patches. And in this case, the FBI is doing everyone a great service because they could have really done a lot of damage with this and stolen a lot of information. In this case, they did it. So just reboot and update your router.
Okay. And that doesn't necessarily – you don't have to stick your – you know, the paperclip and the little hole in the back.
Unplugged. You have to reset the factory. We're just talking about pulling the power out for, 10, 15 seconds and then plugging it back in.
And then if your password to get into your router is still the default password, or even if you've changed it, you should probably go ahead and change it is what they're recommending as well.
And if you do have an older one and you update it, chances are, because I've seen this before, the router vendors are taking security more seriously. You'll be forced to change it. It's not an option on new setups of many new routers. And also, if you have older routers, when you upgrade them, you're going to find, hey, you need to change this, and we're not even going to let you use your router until you do. So just be aware that could also happen.
Okay. Anything else you wanted to talk about on today's show? You sent me a note about some debate in Central Washington on electricity usage and rates and Bitcoin mining. That sounds kind of interesting.
It's one of those things where we mentioned before that by the end of this year, the estimated electricity use to mining Bitcoin in Ireland will be more than all the rest of the businesses and users combined. It will be the number one by far as energy user. Well, Bitcoin miners, because the cost of the energy required to mine a Bitcoin is actually a lot of money anymore, and it gets harder every few months. To mine those, what happens is they're always looking for cheap electricity. Well, Central Washington, with all the hyde product, with all the dams and stuff, has really, really cheap energy compared to most of the country. So Bitcoiners have been moving in and demanding basically three times electricity the entire region uses to just put in computer centers to mine Bitcoins. And a lot of people are having big problems because these companies, this is more than the dams put out. So they're going to have to go buy electricity. The rates are going to triple, if not quadruple, for the residents. So you can start imagining this becomes a big issue fairly fast. And everyone's debating, do we let these people on? How do we manage the growth of usage? How do we set separate rates for Bitcoin miners? So there's a lot of very public debate happening in Central Washington from the residents of these small towns that before used a fraction of the dam's power output, and now these Bitcoin miners want to use it all and then some of all the dams in Central Washington. And they're flying in on private jets from China, mainly. It's kind of funny to start with. There's a group that flew on their private jet right up to the one of the dam operators. Where's the dam manager? We want to buy all your electricity. It doesn't work like that, but that's kind of what's happening. And people with cheap electricity, wherever they can find it, is going to be impacted more and more. The amount of energy that's going to be required to mine bitcoins is, by the end of this year, predictions are it's going to be massive. It's going to be more than many countries' total electricity usage just to mine new bitcoins. So it's kind of an interesting thing going on.
I guess as long as they sustain to pay their energy bill. I can understand. I know in South Dakota it works the same way. Vermilion gets its power mainly from a hydroelectric dam. But in times of overage, we buy from another company that I think it comes down from up north. And those rates are significantly higher.
Yep, significantly higher. I mean, the residents set to Washington, we're looking at maybe quadrupling their rate per kilowatt. I mean, bills, quadrupling overnight kind of thing. So depending on how this all plays out. So,
well, this isn't the first bad thing to happen from Bitcoin mining. They bought up a lot of the chips and graphics cards and other things, causing prices to spike for gamers and regular folks as well.
Yeah, and one of the things most people realize is, because of the way Bitcoin was set up, it gets harder every single, actually it's every few months, but every single year it gets harder and harder and requires more and more CPU to do your Bitcoin mining, which means it's kind of a self-regulating scale. And also, as more people are mining Bitcoins, the more power it's going to take, because it kind of self-regulates. It wants to only be able to produce a Bitcoin every so often. So it doesn't matter if everyone gets into it, everybody just slows down on how many coins they're mining. And then the CPU energy required almost doubles every 6 months to mine a Bitcoin. So it's becoming very impractical for normal users to mine Bitcoins anymore. And the price of electricity is a humongous thing on the profit margin to mining coins now.
Jeff, we'll have to leave it there. Thank you so much for your time. Jeff Litterick from the Bureau, and also John T. Meyer, Lemonly, and Joel Brovelite, our Matt Guru. Thank you for your show today, and we'll see you in 2 weeks.